Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source, grassroots, and partially solar-powered community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. It's good to get some notebook, paper, and pen so you can take notes during the show. First, we look at some debt-related news, facts, and blogs for the week. And from a New York bankruptcy attorney, Jay Fleischman, on his blog, the name of the piece is "The Easiest Way to Give Your Newborn $15,298.36 for a Car." He says, "My son is 3 years old and recently got his first bicycle. His mom and I joked with neighbors that he'd be looking at new cars pretty soon." Very funny, right? Just the usual thinly veiled parental angst about the kids getting old too quickly? Sure, but it also scared the heck out of me. I mean, have you looked at the cost of a car these days? And what are they going to cost in 15 years when my little boy gets that little card, or whatever it's going to be in 15 years, that gives him the ability to hop on the highway at the moment's notice? So what Jay says is that, as an aside, he's a coffee hound. Each morning on the way into the office, I buy myself a large cup of coffee with skim milk at the deli downstairs. Cost, $2.04. I get 96 cents change, which I promptly dump into my pocket. Each evening, I take the day's spare change and throw it into a big container that sits by the front door. That's right. I do not spend change under any circumstances. My wife used to laugh at me, but eventually changed her tune, outwardly at least, and joined in what I call careless savings. I want to give my son money for a car when he turns 18. I don't want to change my lifestyle for the sake of what it is, by all accounts, an unnecessary expense for an 18-year-old. How do I accomplish both goals at once? It's simple, really. In fact, it doesn't involve any change in my lifestyle. At the end of each 30-day month, I will have $28.80 in spare change from buying coffee each morning. I take that money and deposit it into a savings account held at my local bank. Every few months, I take the money and put it into a mutual fund for my son so I can take advantage of a decent yield. Let's make a few assumptions. First, assume that the cost of my coffee does not go up for the next 18 years. Second, let's take as a given the fact that I will not suddenly give up on coffee in favor of tap water. Third, presume an average rate of return of 8% for the fund chosen over the course of the next 18 years. At the end of 18 years, my careless savings will have a value of $15,298.36. Not enough for a brand new car, but I've got to think that he'll be able to get something roadworthy for that. Will this entire scenario play out exactly the way I plan? Probably not. It will most likely turn out better. Why? Because I spend more money each day than on coffee alone. Newspaper, pack of gum, Diet Coke, sandwich, the list goes on and on. I never spend my spare change, so each evening I get home with more than the merely 96 cents in change rattling in my pockets. My wife also joins in on the fun, and I expect that my son will as well once he is old enough to have his own spending money. So $28.80 per week will undoubtedly end up as far more than that. In addition, presuming an 8% rate of return may be off a bit. Perhaps it will be slightly less, but more likely, it might be more than that. We're at a low point in interest rates, but what goes down will eventually go up. Mutual fund and money market accounts may yield far more than 8% over the next 18 years. The point of this exercise is not to teach you how to buy a car for your child. Rather, it's designed to show exactly how to take your own careless savings and put it to good use, how it can grow over time, and how you can save for, well, for whatever you please, without changing your spending habits one bit. What will you save for with your careless savings fund? So that was by bankruptcy attorney Jay Fleischman from New York. And as we've discussed in the past on shows dedicated solely to that issue of mutual funds, the key to this is putting the money ultimately into a mutual fund and just letting it stay there for 10 years. Historically, you're looking at 10% growth rate for whatever you put in. So take the cash, invest it in a mutual fund, and leave it there. I've recently started doing the same thing with one of my grandsons, the eldest, the four-year-old. He seems to love quarters. So with his mother, I set up a semi-token economy based on his behavior in which he gets quarters each day for staying in line, doing his chores, and helping out his mom in a kind and, of course, loving way, which she has discovered is an economy that he will abide by when he is made aware of his behavior in relationship to quarters. Each week, I take the quarters and I mail them along with stickers to my grandson, who loves getting packages, even little letters. Now, they have quarters in them, and he puts them in his piggy bank temporarily. What his mother will do then later on is, at the end of several months, take those quarters and put them into a mutual fund. Mom thinks it's a great idea, as does Dad. I have a connection with my grandson that is very lively, even though we live 1,800 miles apart. And frankly, it does not cost a whole lot of money. But the best thing, it is a positive reward system for being able to do the right thing and handle money properly. Not to mention how fun it is getting messages on my cell phone from him telling me how much he loves me, which he probably would do without the quarters anyway, but it certainly is an incentive. The bottom line for all of these things, again, is savings. It's a very critical component nowadays of making one's life in the future much more financially sound. Rather than spend, 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 if we save, 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 and make it into a goal, then we are prepared for whatever the economy throws at us or whatever personal challenges come up. As a result, we are in control and debt does not become part of our life other than being a four-letter word. If you're just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. On the next segment of the show, we continue our discussion from the two-income trap, why middle-class parents are going broke, which I've been discussing for quite a while now. It is by Elizabeth Warren, who is quite frequently in the news nowadays, and her daughter, Amelia Warren-Tiagi. I start this portion of the show with an important credit because the thoughts, ideas, examples, and quotes used in this program are directly from or based on the work, theories, and books of Professor Elizabeth Warren from Harvard and Amelia Warren-Tiagi, who are two of America's leading champions for debtors. I recommend their books highly, All Your Worth and The Two-Income Trap. You could also visit the archives at www.kruufm.com and look under life and debt at the 123 programs that are now available for educating you on a variety of issues in the field of debt. And most importantly, how to make it a level playing field for yourself. For the last several weeks, we have been talking about the financial fire drill, which is what we do when, in fact, the fire hasn't started, meaning the debt hasn't come ablaze, roaring back to our front door. Professor Warren had three basic inquiries. The first question is, can your family survive without one income? That is, if your family is like the average two-income family, then you face a 1 in 16 chance that in any given year, at least one of you will lose your job. And if you're a single parent, you actually face smaller odds of a layoff because there's only one person at work. But the consequences from a job loss would be even worse if that sole income disappears. In either case, the litmus test is, can you survive for 6 months without one of the incomes that you currently rely on? If you are a married couple with only one earner, then the question's easier. Could the stay-at-home parent enter the job market if something happened to the primary breadwinner? Regardless of your group, if the answer is no, then it's time for some disaster planning, and this should have happened all along, and it is really the fundamental concept of savings that I had discussed at the beginning of the show in a very simple way. Getting 6 months of savings, that is 6 months of living without having that income off money in the bank, is what the goal is. And frankly, that has to be liquid funds. And even though it may not be earning a lot of interest, we can get at it quickly without any kind of penalty or delay. The second point that Professor and Amelia raise is, can you downshift the fixed expenses? And this is a very critical understanding. Fixed expenses, not the frills and whatnot that we go after our wants, as we call them throughout the curriculum here. If you're having trouble making ends meet, the average financial planning book advises you to pass up those impulse purchases or another dinner out so you can save more and get out of debt. Professor Warren points out that this isn't right, actually. If you eliminate all the treats while the times are good, then there will be no place to cut back when a real financial crisis appears. What she says is you need to take a very careful look at your budget. If you are feeling squeezed during ordinary times, it's not the problem of the occasional dinner or movie or bowling or that new pair of shoes that you may feel guilty about later. It is much deeper than that. You have a bigger problem in your budget. You have a problem with the fixed costs. That's the time you have to take a hard look at the necessities, not the frills, which are really trivial relative to the necessities. If you're having a difficult time making ends meet, think about lowering your fixed expenses. Can you manage a few more years without that new car? Can you sign up for the lower cost HMO, even if that means shifting the kid to a different pediatrician? Would the toddler be all right in a less expensive preschool? And of course, she points out that the toughest question of all is, should you move to a cheaper house when you can manage on a smaller mortgage? Now, each of these is obviously a difficult decision for any family. Conspicuous consumption and having a new car really goes to a central theme of psychological well-being. Although I marvel at the listserv that I'm on with over 4,000 of the top consumer bankruptcy attorneys in the nation, how many point out that they drive old junkers. Of course, we're all very used to loss, and bankruptcy attorneys for consumers tend to be on the lower echelon of income amongst attorneys, but that they would actually parade it with broken down vehicles is frankly a hoot reading the listserv. And several years ago, I reached the same point myself, and I don't feel bad about it at all. The engine's good, the safety components are good, and the body is starting to rot away. So what? The key is not so much what I appear to be, but how, frankly, I'm not wasting money on a fancy ride. But as I said, every individual has a different level of comfort with these kinds of issues. But the important thing is that it's better to confront them now when you have time and flexibility to make reasonable choices, rather than later when the creditors are calling and your back is to the wall. Very important point. And as I have pointed out on numerous occasions in the past, and I am going to say it again, because I believe this is really the fundamental theme which is rocking the middle class American economy, when we're out shopping for things, particularly a home, don't stretch yourself to buy a thing you can't afford. Now, if that thing is the home, you have to look at that very closely. If the only way you can meet the mortgage payments for your dream home is to tighten your belt and commit both incomes, don't do it. And I emphasize and underscore the don't do it. The fact that you have been approved for a mortgage is absolutely no guarantee that you can actually afford it. And we see that plastered all over the media now. We're seeing the results of people who were convinced they could afford something that, frankly, either they couldn't, or it was a bait and shift kind of operation, which is so typical. It's in the fine print that we get nailed. As painful as it may be, it is wiser to rent for a few more years or buy a smaller home or a less expensive car on a 3-year car plan and a fixed 30-year mortgage plan, because if you don't and can't afford it at that level, the oversized mortgage and oversized car will leave you with absolutely no room for error, no cash for even minor emergencies, let alone a real disaster. But the silver lining in all this, according to Professor Warren, and at first I didn't agree, is that it is okay to splurge on extras. Forget the overconsumption camp mythology. So long as you're staying out of debt and putting something away in savings, you should feel free to buy the kids a new pair of sneaks or treat yourself out to a night on the town. If tough times come, you can drop those expenditures in a heartbeat. So as long as your fixed expenses are low enough that you can manage during a crisis, then you can count yourself secure enough to go ahead and have some fun and feel some fulfillment in your life, which is very important. If you're just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. So the next point in the financial fire drill is, what is your emergency backup plan? You have to go through the painful game of what ifs. What if your husband loses his job? What if grandma's health fails? What if your own health fails? What if you and your spouse split up? The point of this litany is not to send you running for a bottle of aspirin, but to help you be prepared if the unthinkable happens. There are black holes in life, and we have to be very careful to try to offset them in advance. As difficult as it may be, you need to make a plan and to consider what could be done now to make that plan feasible. When you do your budget, add a separate line for these just-in-case safety precautions. And the emergency backup plan may cause you to rethink some of your financial commitments. We pay particular attention to timing. in finances, long-term commitments are the most dangerous. Sometimes they are unavoidable, such as when you buy your home, go to college, and those kinds of commitments. But whenever possible, go for a shorter commitment, since that will give you what you need most in times of trouble, and that is flexibility. Choose the 36-month car loan instead of the 60-month commitment. If that drives the payment up too high, then there is a warning, implicit. You cannot afford this car, and you should opt for something less expensive. Once you pay off the car, hang on to it for an extra year or two and keep making payments to yourself. After two or three times around, you can pay for your car in advance, giving yourself that much more flexibility in your budget. Of course, details do vary on any loan, but think of every long-term commitment in terms of walking a tightrope. So long as your family is on the rope, there is a risk of disaster. Take the shortest walks you can. But one very important caveat, particularly with mortgages, we want to have the extended fixed mortgage up to 30 years. Historically and classically, that has proven to be the best deal. The short-term balloon payment option plan kinds of mortgages, or now these 40-year mortgages, not good. You get the fixed rate, 30 years, and then when you have some cash to start paying down the principal, there are some plans that can actually help you to accelerate the reduction of interest payments over the life of the 30 years, but it's because you have extra money available to do it, not that you're required to do it, and you can reduce dramatically the amount of the mortgage interest payments. However, you do not want to be in the situation where you think that in 5 years with a balloon, you're going to be able to refinance that mortgage. The economy is much too volatile and fragile, and there's no guarantee that your credit report is going to exude perfection. There's usually something there, and it could create a huge problem when going to pay off that balloon by getting another loan. Another area in this fixed commitments section is you should also assess your insurance coverage. I had recommended in the past that you do it every 2 years, and you can actually play one insurance carrier against another. I've had personally reductions of thousands of dollars in insurance premiums in a relatively short time by doing that. That's a tremendous savings. Also, you should purchase insurance that fits your circumstances. For example, should you purchase a disability insurance policy just in case? Should you beef up your life insurance policy? You have to talk to your parents about their plans. Can you help them buy long-term care insurance? This is becoming a real issue as people live longer and the cost of living are increasing in quantum leaps. Perhaps your siblings could help out as well with parents. Long-term care insurance can give several families, your own, your parents, and your siblings, a better chance of surviving financially if your parents need daily assistance. When everyone is healthy, the thought of disability can seem like a very remote possibility, a bad dream that strikes others, and many of us live this way in our own overly optimistic world. Busy families with young children are often so engrossed in what's going on, they don't think of the future. But the fact remains, medical problems send 750,000 families to the bankruptcy courts each year, so think about more insurance. If you never use it, then count yourself lucky. Now, as a small aside, there are these help that won't help kinds of marketing products that have come at us of late. A growing number of credit card companies began to hawk the credit protection insurance, urging you to protect your family in the event of a job loss, disability, or death in the family. Well, that sounds like a perfect prescription, but caveat emptor, buyer beware. Most of these policies do nothing more than make the minimum monthly payment on the balance you were carrying at the time you lost your job or developed a disability. And with the interest rates that are now there and the credit card company's ability to change the terms, even with minimum payments, those credit cards will never be paid off. And if one goes back to health again, one's often in a worse condition than one started, even though payments were being made. Some policies also promise to discharge your debt in the event of your death, but what kind of benefit is that? Regardless of your insurance status, your heirs will not be required to pay your balance. By law, it's just not there. In most cases, the credit card company will write off your debts even if you never purchase the credit protection insurance. And if you don't have an outstanding balance, credit insurance doesn't do a thing for you. This form of insurance is very expensive. For example, if you carry a $3,000 balance, you will pay over $300 a year for an average policy. Professor Warren points out that if you can scrape together some money, buy a real disability policy from a reputable insurance company, or put your money in the bank, credit insurance is a sucker's bet. Now, with all that said, what happens when the house is already on fire? In other words, what about those families for whom the fire drill comes too late? These are the people that are most often ignored by advice peddlers. They don't have money. And they are the most likely to be victimized by unscrupulous creditors, which still exist in hordes out there. In fact, Professor Warren says that these are actually the families to whom she dedicated the book, The Two Income Trap, and she offers a few direct words of advice, and she hopes comfort. She says, avoid the blame game. With the benefit of 2020 hindsight, it's tempting to beat yourself up about the smarter choices you might have made. But if you are like nearly 90% of the families in financial trouble, you got that way because something lousy happened to you. Maybe your business went under, your husband left you, or you got too sick to work. Maybe even though you had health insurance, it didn't cover areas you thought were covered. If you made the decisions you did in order to take care of your family, then, at least in Professor Warren's opinion, her daughter's opinion, and definitely in my opinion, you have nothing to feel guilty about. Go easy on yourself, because your creditors certainly will not. They love you as long as everything is coming in on the profit ledger. But as soon as those payments stop, they become the embodiment of harassment. Just go easy on yourself. Also, go easy on your spouse. Your financial well-being isn't the only thing at risk when you're in financial trouble. So is the marriage. If your family is like most, your marriage may be more vulnerable right then at the financial crisis time than at any other time in your life. For many couples, except for the financial problems which almost destroy the marriage, if not actually destroy the marriage, people seem to have had a nearly perfect relationship. Money is often the only thing that people argue about, but that's enough to ruin even the best friendship. Husbands often feel ashamed by their inability to provide in what they presume is a proper fashion. And wives may feel overburdened by the demands of bill collectors, bosses, and children. So you have to be kind and stay kind. You're both under enormous strain during those times, and taking it out on each other will only make things worse. And I'll continue these points next week. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous debt manageable life.